Today is Friday, February 8th, 1991. This is Carol Rutledge, and I'm talking with Dr. Siegfried Elgin in Waseca. Could you give me your name and where you were born?
My name is Dr. Siegfried Elgin. I was born July the 9th, 1903, in Waseca, Minnesota. We lived about 5 miles southeast of town, out in the country.
What were your early memories of your home? Were you on a farm?
I was on a farm.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. I had one brother and one sister. And they're both older than I. I was the youngest one in the family.
What was your father's name and your mother's name?
My father's name was Fred, and my mother's name was Anna Catherine.
Were they born in this country?
No, they were both born in Germany. My father was born in Oldenburg, which is a country bordering Holland. He was raised by his uncle and aunt because his mother died when he was 3 weeks old. He was the only one in this that ever came to this country. He was 26 years old when he came here, and he'd got his elementary schooling there, and he served in the Army the usual 3 years. Then he learned his trade as a carpenter. And when he came to this country, he followed that trade for a few years. And because of the many days that they couldn't work, he finally decided he wanted to go to farming, which he did. And
did he come directly to Waseca?
He came to Meriden, and with the exception of a year that he spent in Minneapolis and another year in New Ulm, his carpenter trade.
Did he homestead that property then where he...
No, he bought it. He bought the property.
And what is your mother's background? Where did
My mother was born in Bavaria, in near a little town by the name of Selb, which was close to the Czech border. Selb was the place where the mining for the materials, the lime, I guess it was called, was used in the Selb dishes. And her father was a foreman in that mine until he developed a silicosis lung from the dust, and he died quite young. She had his sister and two brothers. And her mother came to this country then, bringing her 4 children along. My mother was 9 years old when she came here. And when she came to this country, the stepfather that she acquired here didn't believe in any schooling. And my mother never got any further education in this country, just what she had in Germany.
Where did they settle here?
They settled near Meriden, too.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Rather north of Meriden, where they settled. And they lived out about 6 miles southeast of town, too.
So what were the names of your siblings then?
Their name was Royal. It's spelled R-E-U-L. We pronounced it Royal. She had two brothers, George and Carl, and one sister, Catherine. They were all older than she was.
And so they were married here?
Yes.
In this area?
And my mother came to this country, I think, quite a few years before my father came to this country. But they met here and were married here.
Did any of their family join them so they had brothers and sisters around?
My father never had any of his relatives come to this country. He was here alone. My mother, I think there was an aunt and uncle here. That was all that I can remember.
Now, how about your immediate family? Can you recall some memories of your home life, where I'm sure there must have been an emphasis on books and studying?
Yes, well, I grew up as a country kid on the farm. And
did you have chores to do?
Yes, as soon as I was able to do, had little chores.
What were those chores, do you remember?
Oh, feeding cattle, milking cows. And my father bought a couple of sheep. And those were mine. Raised some sheep. And the income from the sheep, that was always mine.
Good. So were you a saver? Did you save?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school. There's a little school right across the road from where my home was. District 45.
Oh, you were lucky you were so close.
Yes.
And you have a picture of that school.
Yes.
Who was your first school teacher?
My first school teacher was a Gertrude Schutte.
That's a familiar name in this county, isn't it? How many children were there in your school? Looks like quite a few.
Well, usually in the neighborhood of 20, and covering the 8 grades, first through 8. Those country schools only had grades up through 8. There they quit.
Did you, I imagine that you liked going to school very much.
Yes, I enjoyed that. I always did like school.
Did they have enough materials for you, or did she have to get some extra materials for you when you were there?
No, just the materials that were available there.
You had the advantage of learning from all the classes then.
Oh, yes. The teacher had all 8 grades that she had to take care of and teach.
Did she teach science classes?
No. No. They, of course, taught reading, English, grammar, and geography. We really got geography, which I guess isn't taught too much now from what I've been told. And arithmetic, as it was called, and history. We had always had good courses in English.
How long were your school days?
Classes would start at 9, and we'd have an hour off at noon, and the classes ended at 4 in the afternoon.
I imagine you were able to go home for lunch.
I went home for lunch. It was just across the road.
Do you remember your first day in school?
Yes, I remember. We had The school at that time had doubled seats, and the boy I sat with was his name was Herbert Spies, and Herbert Spies was a brother of Henry Spies, the older Henry Spies that was a policeman here in town for many years,
yeah.
And his son Henry Jr. became policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see.
Were you excited to go to school and couldn't wait to go? And
yes, the folks always told me that they had trouble keeping me at home before I started to go to school. And finally, they decided, well, I might as well go. I wouldn't have to walk over there every day, and they'd have to watch where it was.
Right, good idea. So you didn't have to be five by a certain day in order to go to school, just when you were ready to go and were
well,
5 years old.
Yes, I was
good.
5 years old, and I finished the eighth grade there when I was 11.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what did you do?
Well,
you were too young to go to the high school in Waseca.
Well, there was no way to go. There's no busing in those days.
I know many children used to live in town if they had a relative or something here.
Well, my folks just couldn't afford to let me do that.
How did you get high school credits then? I understand that you took some correspondence classes?
Yes. See, I can show you some.
Okay, now I'm looking at a book that is one of the courses Dr. Elgin took.
Those are my lessons that I wrote.
Now, is this high school or college?
It was supposed to be, there's quite a history with that particular course. I took it for high school credit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I...
It's called Vertebrate Embryology, Lesson 1.
And when I applied for admission at the University of Chicago, when I had covered enough courses, they decided to give me an advanced standing in the university on that. They didn't apply it to high school, but gave me an advanced standing and gave me additional credit in some other courses that I took.
How old were you then?
Well, I was around 18, 19 years old, and I was 22 when I finally finished and started at the University of Chicago.
So between the time you finished your country schooling at 11 and did the correspondence courses with the University of Chicago for a number of years, what did you do with those years?
Those years were spent on the farm.
On the farm working.
Doing regular work on the farm.
How did you hear about the correspondence courses from the University of Chicago?
Well, I think that was a roundabout story, too. I always wanted to get more studies, and a Dr. Mankato that had taken care of my mother gave her the name of the Rush Medical School in Chicago where he had attended, and he says, you write there and find out about courses that may be available, which I did, and...
You were interested in being a doctor then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when I first got that idea, but that's as far back as I can remember. I always wanted to do that. And they then... to the University of Chicago. That's how I first found out about the horses. And
you have some wonderful letters and memorabilia here.
After I had taken the course, they had sent the questions to the county superintendent of schools here at the courthouse, H.C. Van Loo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd write the examination there, and he would send it to the University of Chicago, and it would be corrected, and those would be my grades.
Here are some of the classes. Elementary Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar.
Another one.
Oh my, wonderful writing on here. Elementary Algebra. Plane Geometry. I might say these are wonderful grades, of course. Intermediate German. Now, did you speak German in your home?
Yes, my folks always did.
Elementary Scientific German. Advanced English Composition. My, people had beautiful hands. English Literature. Mythology. Morphology. This was in 1923. History of the United States. Just kind of thumbing through here. History of Europe, more Latin, zoology, vertebrate zoology, embryology.
That's this course over here.
Mm-hmm. And more literature and mathematics.
I don't think those cards are in order.
When did you finish your work there?
Let's see, that was in the summer of 1925.
Now, tell me about this embryology course. You said that they sent you slides.
They sent slides, and I had to have my own microscope, regular microscope that I use in medical school. Still have it, too.
Now, was that a problem to get a microscope?
My dad sold some hogs. And we then got the microscope from Bosch and Lomb.
How did you feel when that microscope came to your door?
Quite excited.
Oh, yes.
Quite excited.
What kind of slides, what were on the slides that they sent to you?
Well, that depended upon the courses that I was taking now.
This is the embryology, and I noticed that you have some drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Many drawings. It's all typewritten. Did you learn to type at home?
Hunt and peck.
Hunt and peck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you did a beautiful job. Beautiful drawings, all in color. Lovely. Beautifully done. Very exact work.
In that particular course in embryology, I started saying before, when I turned all my credits into the university, they took some of these and gave me more credits than when I'd taken this one here that mentioned morphology. I'd heard you say that was there were three major courses in botany that I had taken, and I remember right, they took all of that and gave me 7 credits at the University of Chicago, and then they took my embryology and comparative anatomy and zoology and gave me an advanced standing because they said those were college courses. So, I had that advanced standing when I entered the University of Chicago. I had 3 1/4 credit out of the way already.
Wonderful, yes. Now, did you go to the University of Chicago then?
Yes, I went to the University of Chicago.
That was a thrilling time for you.
Yes, it was. I had never been away in a big city.
My goodness. Where did you stay?
I stayed in a private home.
Did you go by train?
Yes, we had trains those days.
It must have been a real event for the whole community to have one of their own travel so far to school.
Meanwhile, before I went there, my father sold his farm. And he said, "Now, I've got a little money now. I'm going to send you to school. And I don't want you to work. But I want you to spend every minute of time that you've got at your books. And you're not to get a job. If you will promise that when you finish, that you will come and take care of Mother and me, because our money will be just about gone by then. That's one reason why I came to Osika, stayed here."
Mm-hmm. From the promise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in Chicago, well, Chicago was an expensive place to go to school. It was then, and it still is. And then I transferred to the University of Minnesota.
When was that?
That was, it must have been in January of 1926, I believe.
So you were in Chicago for
a year? I was there just one quarter
at
the university.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota then, they were very willing to accept all the credits that Chicago had allowed.
Yes.
At first, before I went to Chicago, of course, I inquired at Minnesota. Well, they weren't so sure whether the high school work done that way would be accepted. But after Chicago had accepted and given me a lot more credit than what I'd actually earned, and given me an advanced standing, there was no question at all at Minnesota anymore.
Well, good. Now, did you have the same arrangement there, that you did not have a job, but you studied hard?
I studied, yes.
And do you remember any of your main professors?
Oh, I sure do. I sure do. Of course, there were 2 years of pre-medic work those days, but the men that we had, instructors in the medical school, I remember them very, very well. Fine people.
Can you tell just a couple of names so we can get those down?
Do you want them from the...
I think in the medicals.
In the medical school.
Area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was Dr. Jackson, Clarence Jackson, who was a professor of anatomy. And Lee Haynes Fowler, who was the laboratory instructor in anatomy. And I still remember what Dr. Fowler told the anatomy section. The class was divided into four sections. I remember what he said the first day. He says, "Now the grades that you fellows will make in anatomy are going to be grades that will follow you all through medical school."
He was warning you.
Yeah. And it did. When I was at the end of the junior year in medicine, of course, the students were selected for the honorary fraternity, AOA, Alpha Omega Alpha. And my roommate and I were both elected. And when we were initiated into the fraternity, Dr. Fowler sat at a table right across from my roommate and I, classmates too. We always worked together in the all through medical school classes. And Dr. Fowler says, "Now, you fellows remember what I told you the first day in anatomy?
You had.
Yeah. Then there was Dr. Bell in pathology. And Dr. Scott in physiology. Dr. Scott in physiology, he was a man, when he'd give his lectures, he'd come into the classroom, we'd have fans going, oh, they're too noisy. He'd turn all the fans off. He'd say, it isn't too warm here.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the fans on, he could lecture that you'd hear every word he said, mainly because he stuttered so.
Oh.
He was so slow in getting it across that we could write down every word he said.
How many students would be in your in one of your class sessions?
Well, our class was about 120
in your
class, but uh-huh. we were divided into sections, into four sections. We
so
could make our choice. One section at the end of the sophomore year would stay right on and finish without any more vacation. And the next section would put in the summer session, but they'd get the fall quarter off for vacation. And another section, well, they'd alternate, so mm-hmm. there'd always be mm-hmm. one section there. And section that I and my roommate got into, which we wanted, we had all of our summers off.
Oh, wonderful. Did you come home then?
Yes, we'd come home. And then that time would be spent going over lecture notes that we had the year before, that we'd already been examined on.
Was your roommate from Waseca too?
No, he was up from the northwestern part of the state, a little town. I can't be.
When did you finish your study at the university?
That finished the medical school
mm-hmm.
for me. That was in the spring of 1931. And then we had to take a year of internship. So we finally got our degrees in June of 1932.
What was your favorite class during the, or your favorite area in the medical school?
Well, I believe I would have to say it probably was anatomy. I liked all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But when we had finished our second year in the medical school, Dr. Jackson wanted me to stay on and go into anatomy. He says, I'll make an anatomist out of you. And, well, it was quite a job to decide whether or not to stay. It was very tempting, because I liked it, but I also liked the general work. And I finally decided I would finish the way I had planned and not deviate from it. And I was always glad I did.
When did you decide to study in Europe, and when did you decide to study eyes? Into the eye area.
Well, that is quite a story again. My internship, which was, I took that up at St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth. And there were six interns there. We divided into three groups, two interns working together. And it worked out so that every third night, two interns would be on duty on call, and the one would sign out at 12 o'clock at night, and the other one would stay on all night. And then you'd rotate or reverse that order the next time you're on three mm-hmm. nights. And the first 4 months of the internship, I noticed one of the men there in Duluth. He's an ophthalmologist by the name of Dr. Tildequist. For some reason or other, he just fascinated me. But you couldn't get him to talk. When he'd make his rounds to see his patients, and when I was on that service, I couldn't walk as fast as he could get down the halls. I'd always be tagging behind. And he would never talk. But there was something about him that I was just fascinated. Then, when the time came that I finished my first session in the dispensary, the eye dispensary. By the way, nobody else liked it, but I did. Nobody else did ever show up either. None of the other interns. They just dropped that part.
Huh.
But I had put in 4 months, 2 afternoons a week, which I enjoyed very much. And then the next 4 months, when the next group of interns was supposed to take the dispensary, I asked permission to, well, I knew that Dr. Tildequist was going to have the dispensary for the next 4 months, 2 afternoons a week. And I thought, here's my chance to get to know this man better. And I asked permission to come. And they said, oh, sure, you can come. So they set up a place for me to work. Dispensary, and Dr. Tildequist came, took off his coat and hat, said, good afternoon. He sat down. He got to work at his station, I at mine. And we finished the afternoon. He put on his coat and hat. He said, have you been here before? I said, yes, I've been here 4 months already. And you want to stay here for again? Yeah. I said, I'd like to. He put on his coat and hat and said goodbye and well, good evening. He left. Next session, the same story. Took off his coat and said, we got to work. I had my station, he had his. And at the end of the session, he said, you've been here before and you want to stay here some more? I said, I'd like to. And he said, will you stay with me for 4 months? I says, I'd like to. Okay, he says, you go to the library and you get such and such book. And you study, and he told me the chapter said he wanted me to cover. And we did. The next session, the next half day, it was the same story, but at the end of the session, he said, will you stay here for 4 months with me? And I said, yes, I will. He got out a little portable blackboard that they had there, and he lectured me on the topics that he'd asked me to study. The theory of lenses, how lenses work, theory of light, which he didn't have to do. He didn't have to teach that way, but he did.
I'm sure he was so happy to see you there.
And that went on for 4 months. And we covered a lot of territory, and I really got a good foundation in the basics of
lenses. How did you spell his name?
Tildequist, It was built the way it sounded.
Mm-hmm. What was his first name?
I can't think of it right now. Well, let's just call him Dr. Tildequist.
Yes, that's fine.
Matter of fact, that's what he always was to me anyway, and I never thought of him having a first name.
No. Did he, at the end of your study together, command you on your work?
Yes. And, of course, that's where I got my first liking to eye work. Well, I couldn't go into any advanced study then. At that time, I didn't have money. So I came here and I started in general practice.
When was that?
That was in... I started here on August 1st in 1932.
Where was your office?
It was in the Conway Building down South State Street. I think I noticed the other day as I drove past the place that there's a print shop some sorts in
there. Quality print?
I think that that's what it says. Frank Conway had a real estate office and was Seeker Savings and Loan office that he ran. I stayed there until in the summer of 1940. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself there.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I said, Dr. Tildequist and I got to be the best of friends. And at medical meetings, we'd always have a good chat. Whenever I'd get to Duluth, I'd either have to come to his house. And by the way, he was a bachelor, lived there with his sister. He was never married. And he always said, I wish you'd go to Vienna and study your ophthalmology. And he says, that's where I went. And in 1938, that's where I did go. I had enough money then that I could pay my own way then, take the courses at the University of Vienna.
That was a big step.
Mm-hmm. Then I came back here again. And I still had quite a bit of general work and patients that I'd taken care of before wanted to come back, but gradually got worked over to where I could just drop the general work and do all ophthalmology.
When you came back, did you come back to the same office?
Yes, I did.
Were you practicing alone?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I practiced alone. By the way, I always did practice alone.
Mm-hmm. How long were you in Vienna?
Well, Hitler was already in there, in Vienna at that time. And we had to work day and night to get the stuff that we wanted to, because it was so evident that things were going to happen there before long.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to get out of there.
So when were you there in Vienna?
1938.
And how long were you there?
Well, we covered a year's work there. It wasn't quite that many months,
mm-hmm.
because we worked day and night. The teachers there, they would teach at night.
They would?
Yes.
Just go right through.
Mm-hmm. And they did. Courses there were different than they were in this country at that time.
How was that?
Here, at that time, the school laid out the work that you were supposed to take. Over there, you laid out your plan of work, and you'd get the professors there to teach that particular course, and you'd pay him.
Oh.
That's the way.
So it could be one-on-one, or maybe just a few people?
You really could cover a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one course that I took, I thought I should have about 20 hours of work of that. And I went to the professor there and I said, I'd like to have 20 hours of that work. He says, if I can't teach that course in 10 hours, I better quit teaching, he says. He says, everything that you need to know, I can teach in 10 hours, which he did.
Intensive, though.
Mm-hmm.
Had to...
You, so much of your work, just independent, it wasn't a big class. Mm-hmm. Some of them were, but surgery, for example. You'd get to do surgery on warm cadavers, those that had passed away in the, which is an enormously big hospital there, the Vienna General. And in the morning, because they had state medicine then already, which I hope we'll never get, but we're certainly heading for it. The patient would die, the family would have no say over that person.
Oh.
It could be used for most anything as long as the appearance wasn't mutilated. Well, you could do eye surgery and close it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And not disfigure the person, and you'd do that first thing in the morning.
How did you feel about that?
Well, it was like working on a live person, only there's no bleeding anymore, you see. Like here, of course, the patient is put to sleep or anesthetized with local anesthetic, and you have bleeding to contend with. There you didn't.
Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful opportunity for you.
It was. Here in this country, here, at that time, you just couldn't get a chance to do the surgery yourself. You'd watch.
Mm-hmm.
And try to remember, and then when you get out on your own, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there, you actually did the work.
Mm-hmm. What were the names of some of the other doctors besides Dr. Tilderquist? Do you remember if anybody especially famous? Well, maybe they were all famous, probably.
Well, in Vienna.
Yeah.
The one was a doctor, Ad Albert Fuchs, F-U-C.
And what was his first name?
Ad Albert, A-D, A-L, B-E-R-T.
Okay.
His father was Ernest Fuchs, who for years before, at that time, well, he was considered the great man in ophthalmology. He got a textbook about that thing. I've got a copy of it. I managed to get one here, a used copy. It was out of print then. But I didn't know Ernest Fuchs, but Ad Albert I did. I've got his books too. He taught mainly the histology of eye and the pathology of eye. Then the surgery of the eye, a younger man. I have his picture up in the office too.
We can talk about that the next time.
And they had an open season on Jews over there in Vienna. Because Hitler was already in there, and the very first question they asked me at the university when I registered there, are you a pure Aryan?
How did you feel about that?
Well, I could say yes. Well, you could.
Excuse me. Who is it? The clock that we just heard Dr. Elgin made. It's a very lovely wooden clock. You were saying about when you entered the university, they asked you if you were a Jewish.
Yeah. If you were Jewish when you came there, you could have the You could take lecture courses, but you could not examine a patient. The Jews couldn't. So that's the kind of atmosphere you had to work under.
Was it Hitler's? Frightening in the community and outside of your work when you left school? Was it frightening?
Yes, it was. You'd see those black shirt people around there. You'd wake up at night, you'd hear noise out in the street, here'd be a whole group of soldiers marching up the street, or guns, cannons being hauled through the street. You knew that things were going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I imagine your family was afraid for you.
Well, then we didn't tell them. We didn't tell them. But the park benches there, there were signs painted on there in German, Juden nicht erlaubt, means no Jews allowed. The Jews couldn't even sit in the park benches.
Yeah.
It was rough on them.